podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Jones! Bowden! He's got it! England have won the World Cup by the barest of margins!
Hello and welcome to a look back at the second day's play in the first test from Gaul on the Analyst Inside Cricket. Simon Hughes with you here. Simon Mann, you're in Manchester. You had to get up early to watch the play again, but it was actually probably quite a frustrating day for you in a way, because it's one of those nightmare days for commentators where play starts a little bit late, then there's quite a lot of interesting stuff, and then play gets called off for rain. You can't quite tell if there's going to be any more play or not. But in the end, England have just basically reasserted their dominance.
Yeah, they picked up where they left off yesterday, really, and they're in an extremely strong position in the game. There was enough play, really, today. The other thing as well, of course, is that when there was no play at the start in Gaul, we could watch the test match from the Gabba, which was also enthralling as well, where India dropped two crucial catches that I saw, Labuschagne and then Green later in the day, and I think that, you know, they're going to pay for that. Australia looked to be ahead on the first day of that test match to me, and there was a stat came up that when Australia score 300 in the first innings at the Gabba, they haven't lost since 1932-33, so it feels like a definite advantage Australia on the first day, although India stuck at it with their, you know, new look bowling attack. As for Gaul, well, it was Joe Root's day and to some extent Dan Lawrence's day as well on his debut. I think we should focus on Root first, though, Yoz, shouldn't we? Because he turned a 50 into 100.
Eureka. He's found the answer. Because, you know, his stats have obviously really irked him over the last couple of years. And let's just read them out, actually. Before today, he had 49 50s. And 1700s. He's converted a 50 into 100 every 3.8 times. Now that compares with Smith, Williamson and Kohli, who all converted a 50 into 100 2.1 times in the case of Smith, 2.3 times in the case of Williamson, and 1.8 times in the case of Kohli. So they're almost twice as good, Kohli, Williamson and Smith, at converting 50s into 100s. In fact, incredibly, Kohli has more hundreds than 50s in Test cricket. He has 27 hundreds and 23 50s. So this was clearly something that Joe Root was bothered about, and understandably so. He's a much better player than someone who should keep getting out for 50 or 60, which he's tended to do. He didn't score 100 at all in 2020. And actually, before we get into analysing his game, we should hear from him, actually, because he was in the Virtual Cricket Club, one of our first guests in October, and we talked about converting 50s to 100s, and he actually said that before this series, he'd been to the England team analyst to ask him about those conversions and what he could do about it.
I think as a player and over time, and especially now with the amount of analysis and data that teams have, you have to constantly keep looking to evolve your game. If you keep playing in the same way, teams very quickly find trends and ways and patterns in which you get out. So, of course, you don't want to revamp and completely pull apart your technique and try and start again. But there are certain things that have to keep moving forward. And you know, over time that if you get out in three or four occasions in a similar fashion, teams will be looking at that and will be bowling more balls in that area or trying to use that as a real weapon to get you out. So if you feel like there are flaws or deficiencies within your game or areas that aren't quite as up to scratch as possible, you have to find ways of dealing with that. And sometimes that does mean making minor adjustments in trigger movements or contact points, even shot selection to a degree as well, trying to play that long, almost longer version of cat and mouse, not just within the test match, but also within a calendar year or a series. And I think it's quite an interesting part. It's something that I actually really enjoy about the game, is that you can't just bat one way all the time, or you can't just look to play the same way throughout. You've got to keep looking to improve, got to keep looking to evolve your game, and not just marry up to the conditions that are in front of you, but also be very aware at how sides are going to get you out and how they will be looking to get you out.
So does that mean you actually spend a fair bit of time looking at your own game and sort of thinking, how can I just tweak it? You know, looking at other bowlers and what they might be looking to do, and therefore it's almost like homework, is it, in a way?
It is, yeah. I mean, I sent an email to our analyst at the start of the week, and I said, I want to get, if you could please send me the, over, I think it was over the last 2 years, the all my modes of dismissal, and I want to specifically know if there's any sort of pattern between 0 and 20 and also between 50 and 80 as well, if there are any trends there. So just always trying to find ways in, you know, if there are certain elements of my game that seem to be constantly worked over and I've not got the right answers for, I can go back and look at that and try and find ways of improving that for the future.
So he obviously got some information, some valuable information, because here he is, 168 not out, England 320 for four, Root totally dominant. And I suppose the main evidence that would have come from the team analyst was there isn't a pattern in the way that you get out physically, but there is it mentally. So it's something that you do when you've got 62 that perhaps you change your tempo, you perhaps try a couple of other shots that maybe you don't normally play, maybe you relax. It's a mental thing. So just keep doing what you do between 0 and 50. Be busy, don't be reckless, don't try anything out of your comfort zone, just play. And, you know, play the situation. And actually, Graham Thorpe said an interesting thing to Joe Root. He said, you've got to be more selfish. You're playing for the team too much. You know, be selfish. And that's an interesting sort of, you know, philosophical issue that cricketers who play all three formats have, I think, because one day cricket, 50 over and T20 cricket is all about the team. You sacrifice any personal glory for the sake of the team. You take risks, you know, dot balls are almost a crime kind of thing. And you just try and help the team to win a game. But in Test cricket, it's much more of a selfish game, actually. It's you, the batsman, against the bowler. You must make the bowler work as hard as possible for your wicket or the opposition team and just keep going and, you know, absolutely grind them into the dust. Don't give it away. Be selfish. Be insatiable. You know, be greedy, really. And that's what he was in this innings.
There was a sense of, I felt, inevitability about his 100. It's not a great Sri Lankan side. We talked about this yesterday. Poor batting performance from them. But the ball was spinning. And their spinners are not the worst. Ruan Pereira's got, you know, 150-odd test wickets. Embel Denye is a decent young bowler who's picked up 3 wickets so far. So, I mean, it wasn't straightforward, not by any means. Root was playing right forward or right back. And you spotted something, Yoza, about the way he plays spin. Now, the conventional way to play spin, or one of the conventional ways to play spin, is you don't sweep if the ball is too full because you can get into problems. But,
well, yes, and also to say, actually, that sweeping is dangerous in the DRS era as well, because if you miss it, you're going to be out. And umpires who traditionally in the past would have said, oh, you know, his foot was too far down the pitch, I can't be sure, or it was going down leg or something. Quite a lot of those incidents are now given out by DRS, if not by the umpire. So there is this sort of perception that sweeping is risky. But the way Root sweeps is not risky, because he almost basically uses a straight bat. He gets the bat almost on the ground, flat to the ground, and then if the length is slightly different from what he thought, he'll get a different part of the bat on the ball. It might be the edge, it might be the bottom of the bat, it might be high up the blade. But because he's using a straight bat, and also he's not generally looking to smash it, he's looking to guide it, to deflect it, occasionally to hit it through mid-wicket, there's much more chance of him hitting the ball. He makes sure his head is perfectly in line with the ball, and he gets low to the ground as well, and actually basically keeps his legs out of the way. You know, the traditional way of sweeping is use your sort of foot, your leg, your pad as a sort of second line of defence. But actually, he almost gets his leg out of the way to make sure the bat comes through cleanly and makes contact. And one of the reasons why sweeping is so valuable on this sort of pitch is because it's slow and it's also turning. So driving the ball is quite difficult. You're likely to hit the ball in the air. We've seen that in some of the Sri Lankan dismissals. Dan Lawrence actually, you know, hit a couple in the air as well. Obviously, we saw the early dismissal of Zach Crawley trying to loft a spinner and not getting the timing right. But if you play the sweep and you play it from low as well, rather from high to low, where you've got the danger of top edges or missing the ball because you're sort of coming across it too much. If you keep the bat in the same plane, flat along the ground, you've actually got more chance of hitting it than if you're trying to drive the ball. You saw when Joss Butler came in, he tried to drive the ball early on, nearly got bowled through the gate. So Root has really read the conditions brilliantly and used the sweep in so many different ways, not just to hit the ball, but to manipulate the field as well.
So the conventional wisdom of not sweeping a really full ball is, you know, is not necessarily so. And if you adjust, if you take those things into consideration, it becomes a perfectly safe shot to play, even if the ball is really full.
Again, this is, I suppose, part of the influence of T20. What's the shot that all batsmen like to play against the Yorker in T20? It's the ramp shot, isn't it? And the number of times that batsmen seem to be able to execute that now, even almost a perfect Yorker, if you get your timing and your technique right with the ramp shot, it's a scoring opportunity rather than a very difficult ball to play. And the range of different sweeps and ramps that players have developed means they can play it to almost any length of delivery.
There was one dicey moment for Root fairly early on in the day where he did play a sweep shot, and it was a full ball, and he missed it, and he was struck on the pad, and there was a shout for LBW, and it was given not out, and then we saw the DRS on it. It was umpire's call for impact, and it was spinning onto leg stump. So the umpire had given him out, and he presumably would have reviewed it. He would not have survived. He would have been on his way. So it is not without danger playing the sweep shot, but you know there have been some famous innings where, I mean, Graham Gooch's innings in the World Cup semi-final going back into the 80s, against India is a famous example of just sweeping and sweeping and sweeping against the spinners because it is so difficult to drive, and Root was able to do that today, and well, he's got the chance of a double hundred. His last century was a double hundred. He took advantage of a flat pitch in Hamilton against New Zealand on England's last tour there. And unless one really sort of spits at him tomorrow, you feel that he has got the bit between his teeth. Really, he's really got his eyes on double figures. Who knows as well? I mean, if England bat the day, I mean they could just bat all day. Who knows? Who knows where he could go?
And what it was really good about his innings as well was, going back to this sort of focus and not giving it away, was he really stuck to two or three shots. You know, the sweep, the little deft sweep, occasionally down the wicket and punch it for a single, get to right to the pitch, and the cut, a range of cut shots, beautiful balletic footwork on the back foot to get away and give himself a little bit of room and just steer it through the offside. Not many boundaries. You know, he wasn't trying to thrash the ball around. He was just trying to manipulate it and use the angles that spin creates. And you mentioned Graham Gooch there. One of the finest players of spin that I ever saw and played against was Alan Knott, actually, the Kent wicketkeeper, who was very nimble, and sweep was his default shot against spin. It was practically his defence. It was his forward defence, was the sweep. I remember fielding at Canterbury once, and I was posted at short leg. It was my first season, actually, so I was the sort of Mr. Expendable, stuck at short leg to Embry and Edmonds, two fantastic spin bowlers, and who were making it rip, really rip, on a late season wicket at Canterbury. And Knott came in, they were sort of 100 for five struggling, and Knott came in and just swept them into oblivion. And he played a range of sweeps, from the slog sweep over deep mid wicket to the normal conventional sweep through square leg to for the fine sweep. I was at short leg ducking almost every ball. And the clever thing was, Mike Brearley was captain and he couldn't set a field. Because, of course, you can only have two men behind square on the leg side. And Knott was so good at just finding whichever gap there was on the leg side with the sweep shot against both a left-arm spinner and an off-spinner. And the bowlers were getting more and more frustrated. And of course, in the end, what they do is bowl wider and wider outside off. And then he can score through the offside. And he was brilliant at sweeping, sweeping, sweeping. And then the bowler would go, fed up, go shorter and outside off, and then he cut them. And that's exactly what Root did as well. So a lot of these modern tactics have a bit of a legacy from the past, interestingly.
There's nothing new under the sun. Oh, perhaps there is, though. I mean, you know, they weren't playing the ramp shots, were they, in the
1970s? Yeah, I was ramped Dermot Reeve. Yeah, I was ramped by Dermot Reeve in the 1989 Nat West final. Don't remind me about that again. But, no, so he got down on one knee and swept quick bowlers. So did Martin Speight of Sussex, actually, in the late 80s. So those shots were around then, but obviously not as universal as they are now, or not as good.
Yeah, I mean, I think they've been taken on a bit, haven't they? They've been developed a little bit by some of the major sort of exponents of it, that shot. These, you know, the likes of Joss Butler, for example. So we've talked about Joe Root. I think we should move on to Dan Lawrence. I wonder what sort of day it was for him today. I mean, fantastic to get off the mark straight away. He made 73. What goes through my mind is, you know, with lots of competition in the England batting order is something that, you know, Geoffrey Boycott always says, people remember hundreds. So a great day, a really good day for Dan Lawrence, but ultimately I wonder how disappointed he would have been to have missed out on a century. Having said that, you know, a century early on is no guarantee of anything. I suppose in some ways it might put the pressure on you even more. The expectation grows. I mean, Keaton Jennings, for example, got 100 in his first test match in subcontinental conditions. But what did you see from Dan Lawrence today?
Well, I think the first thing is to say there'll be relief because he dropped a catch on the first day and you suddenly start thinking, oh, am I good enough here? You know, is it all going to go horribly wrong? Am I going to get a second ball or when I bat? So he's got a 73. He looked good. So, you know, that's a good start, isn't it? That's an excellent start. We get kind of almost obsessed by hundreds. He played well. He played a longish innings. He would have benefited massively from batting with Joe Root as well to see how he goes about it. You know, that's the best seat in the house. I think he was, you know, slightly flattered by some fairly ordinary bowling, but at the same time, it's not an easy pitch. So he handled it very well. You know, he got off the mark first ball. I loved the confidence, actually. Mm-hmm. First ball, you know, you when you're going out in first test innings, there must be a tendency to sort of think, well, I better get forward to the first couple here and prod forward. But no, he was back on the stumps, gave himself a bit of room and cutting it through the gap for a single. Excellent start. Then he got a friendly full toss second ball, which he put away for four. Well done. Then he was up the wicket, knocking it for a single. You know, I think the Sri Lankans didn't put him under enough pressure. There should have been a man at silly point. They should have had nobody sort of halfway back at the boundary, mid on and mid off, giving him the opportunity of a single. You know, they should have been kind of almost clustering round him like vultures, beckoning him to make a mistake, as Zach Crawley did early in the innings. So I think, you know, he had a slightly easy ride, but he was impressive. He played some excellent shots. I particularly like that almost smear shot, that kind of carving off drive, almost like a tennis shot. I think Phil Tufnell described it as like a sort of forehand tennis passing shot, sort of topspin off drive, which Kevin Peterson very much made his own, and a lot of other players like Sam Billings and others now are very good at, using the bottom hand to drive the ball, which again you need on a slow pitch. You can't play that sort of high elbow, orthodox drive on a slow turning pitch because you're going to hit it in the air, whereas the bottom hand comes through and sort of almost turns the blade over slightly. He was actually clearing his front leg out of the way as well to play that shot. And so he was bringing kind of one day methods into the test arena. I think he's not technically perfect. I at the moment.
What's wrong with him?
Well, I just think he's slightly across the line. He's a bit at the ball, I think. He hasn't got as soft a hands as the likes of Ollie Pope, for instance. There's just a little bit more class about the way Pope, say, plays compared to Lawrence, who's a bit cruder as a player. So, that is a slightly stylistic point, but I'm also saying, I think he's slightly across the line. He might get into trouble with the ball moving a bit quicker off the surface away. But, excellent start. And, you know, the great thing is he will now think, I can do it at this level, which is, a great state to be in.
Yeah, I remember Zach Crawley saying that at the start of the New Zealand tour when he made 100 in a warm-up game. You know, that doubt, you know, am I good enough to be among these players? You know, he looked around the dressing room, there was Ben Stokes and there was Joe Root and Joss Butler, players like that. Am I good enough? And yeah, okay, I am. And of course, he showed last summer that innings against Pakistan that he very much is. The other thing about Lawrence, his innings, you'd be disappointed not to get 100. You know, when you get to 73, obviously any batsman, any self-respecting batsman wants to go on and make 100. He was actually got out as well. It was a good ball that got him. It turned and bounced and took the glove and went to short leg. So, you know, it's not like he played a really, you know, poor shot or anything like that, or there was a lack of concentration. It was a good ball that got him out from Dilrue and Pereira.
Although he could have been stumped just before that, actually. I mean, he went dancing down the wicket, had a big hack, and should have been stumped, actually, a little bit before that. Well, but it's understandable, you know. I mean, why not have a bit of fun? The situation's pretty good. You can't expect a perfect innings on your debut, can you?
No, well, he could have been stumped. He could have been caught as well. It was a strange one. It was a really bizarre incident where he had a huge hack at the ball, got a little toe end on it. The keeper didn't take it, didn't take the deflection, and then deflected it over the slip fielder, who very nearly caught it as well. And then, as he possibly thought he was going to be stumped, or as he was swung round to play the shot, he went to sort of tap his bat back in the crease and dropped the bat onto the ground. It was a really untidy piece of cricket. We talked about club third 11 incident yesterday with Dick Weller's dismissal and that horrible long hop that Best got him out with. I mean, that was a bit like watching a club fourth 11 incident today. It's funny, isn't it? It's funny to see elite level, top class professionals sometimes imitate fourth 11, fifth 11 club players. I'm all for it. I think it's a good thing every now and again to see the veil slip, if you like.
Actually, I mean, the other thing I'd say about the day's play, and both days' play really, is that it's just drawn more attention to the widening chasm between the big powerhouses of the Test match game and the rest. So, you basically got to say England, Australia, India and New Zealand and the rest. And the rest are just inconsistent. They don't have the resources that England have. They could have in South Africa, but it's all a bit chaotic there. And I just think it's sort of almost exacerbated. COVID has exacerbated the inequalities in life in many ways, and especially in the cricket world. England have managed to complete their summer of matches, whereas Sri Lanka haven't played at home since 2019. And, just the resources that England have. So if you look at the way, say, Root and Lawrence, for example, played spin, they would have had so much opportunity to practice at Loughborough in the tent before Christmas, to look at analysis of their forward and backward movements, to see from Hawkeye how close they got to the ball, where they were intercepting the ball on the front foot, where they were intercepting the ball on the back foot. There's that great theory about playing spin that you don't get caught halfway between forward and back. So they'll be able to analyse all that kind of material and see exactly how they're playing in practice and then bring that into the match environment. That kind of resource would not be available to the same degree to Sri Lankans or probably West Indians or whatever. So, and England and Australia and India in particular, probably New Zealand, are maximising all that data, all that analysis that can make their players better and better, which they then get the chance to put into practice in match situations. The Sri Lankans are just bereft of that kind of opportunity, and it just widens the gap between inability between the teams.
Yeah, it does feel as if Sri Lankan cricket is on a bit of a downer at the moment, all round actually, in all three forms of the game. Although, of course, they did beat England in the World Cup in 2019, a game that seriously threatened England's chances of qualifying. Ultimately, of course, Sri Lanka didn't make the semi-finals. They didn't finish in the top four. We've been so used to them doing well in 50 over World Cups. Of course, they reached the final in 2011. One thing I would say about that is we have seen England have days, or 2 days, like Sri Lanka have had over the last 2 days, although not so many recently. I mean, Sri Lanka have had two of them, really, didn't they? In South Africa, they were well beaten. South Africa got 600 in that first Test match, although Sri Lanka had injury problems. I mean, England did have a day out like that at that pink ball Test match in Auckland when they were bowled out for 58. Then New Zealand scored 400, and then England tried to save the game on the last day, but they only really got to the last day because we had 2 days washed out by bad weather in Auckland. So, you know, England are capable of, having some shocking days as well, and playing poorly in Test matches. I think the test, I think, will come in the next match. You know, unless Sri Lanka can produce something heroic and save this one, it looks unlikely the weather might help them, who knows. But if they go one down here, what will they come up with in the second Test match? I think that is the challenge. I mean, if England just roll them over in the second game as well, then, you know, those alarm bells will be sounding, I think.
One other point about today was that bizarre non-dismissal of Root, who inside edged the ball onto the ground and then it ballooned up off his body and glove and was caught. And of course, the Sri Lankans and indeed their coach Mickey Arthur were absolutely convinced it was out. But the third umpire correctly ruled that once the ball had touched the ground, even if it ricocheted off the body or the glove afterwards, it couldn't be out. Did you know that?
Lyndon Hannibal was the TV umpire. When I saw it, when it first happened in fast motion, no idea what happened. So when you see the replay, of course, when it's in slow motion, you see exactly the sequence of events. So bat onto ground, not out, and then hits the glove and goes up in the air. And then you think, I've never seen that happen before. So you think, hold on a second. So just you check the laws. And I've actually put this law out on Twitter. I said a fair catch. And actually some people interpreted this as saying I thought it was a fair catch when I didn't. I'm just saying what the fair catch law is. Law 33.222. A fielder catches the ball. This is a fair catch. A fielder catches the ball after it's been lawfully struck more than once by the striker, but only if it has not been grounded since it was first struck. So under that law, 33.222, clearly Joe Root was in. So that's all it needed, really, was a quick check on the laws. But one of the things I think about cricket is you see things, you know, you go to a match and, you know, it's as it's always been. And then one day you see something, I've never seen that happen before. And so you start, you know, you start to sort of doubt yourself. But your first instinct is it has to be not out. But all you do, check the laws and clear it up. And Lyndon Hannibal, the third umpire, He was right on it, which was excellent.
It's interesting, isn't it? And you start thinking, well, have I ever seen that happen before? And I can't remember that happening in a game I played in or having seen it before. But of course, with the number of cameras covering the game now, these kind of ridiculous situations do crop up more often. And because of the attention on the game and hotspot and ultra edge and all that, you can detect things which you wouldn't have even known happened in the past. And I suppose the other thing to say about it is that not only are there all more camera angles being filmed, but also they're being recorded as well. You know, perhaps 10 years ago, you'd have had a VT operator, a videotape operator in the truck, manning two or three camera angles and switching between them. And quite a lot of stuff gets missed. But now you've got a man manning every camera angle, or all the camera angles are recorded all the time. So lots of stuff which may not have gone to air or may not have been recorded in the past now is. And actually that relates to the ridiculous furore over Steve Smith scratching at the ground and getting into sort of social media hot water, if nothing else. For appearing to try and scuff out Rishabh Pant's guard. I mean, he wasn't doing anything of the kind. He was just being Steve Smith and thinking he was still batting. But, you know, a few years ago, that bit of footage wouldn't have been captured because the stump cams either wouldn't have been there, or if they were, they wouldn't have been recorded. So that kind of footage wouldn't have existed. And actually, I got a message on Twitter recently saying, well, why doesn't to prove that Steve Smith always does it, why don't we go back on the footage and look at other instances of it? Well, They could. That is actually feasibly possible, but life's too short to spend all day looking at the stump mics and stump cams to see if Steve Smith scratched at the ground any other times.
This whole situation and what happened today and the words you've just spoken there makes me go back to that 1985 last day at Edgbaston in the Ashes with that Wayne Phillips catch. Because the thing is, on those pitches in those days, remember when the ball ballooned up in the air and the catch was claimed and he was given out and the Australian said he was never out and England said, yeah, he was. It hit Alan Lamb's foot at Silly Point on the offside and ballooned up for David Gower to take the catch. Of course, the thing is now, we'd better clear it up, no trouble at all, because there would be about 20 different camera angles and super slow-mo and absolutely show 100% one way or the other. I have to say, when I watched it at the time, because, there's very few cameras then, you think, you because it was a crucial moment in the Ashes series, it's wishful thinking, is it? England desperately hoping it was out, Australia desperately hoping it wasn't. And I don't think anyone really knew for sure in the end. I mean, the umpires gave him out. I mean, could they be absolutely categorically sure that he was out? I don't know. I mean, I've seen it a few times. It might well have been out, just hitting the boot before it bounced on the floor. But these days, of course, you know, it would have been cleared up, no trouble at all, wouldn't it? It'd be very straightforward.
Of course, the cameras don't always clear things up. The bump balls and whether the catch was clean still causes some dispute. And actually, there was one in Sri Lanka, wasn't there, not so long ago, Jayasuriya. I think he was caught by Graham Thorpe. And there was a lot of allegation that was a bump ball. And I can't actually even remember what the final decision was. I think he was given out.
He was given out, yeah, and it clearly hit the ground. I mean, I think he should have been given not out, to be honest with you. I mean, I think that there was enough evidence to give it not out, but for some reason it was given out at the time. I mean, that was an acrimonious series with all sorts of bizarre decisions being made. There was one where Graham Hick just clipped a return catch and just stood there and the umpires gave him not out. It was clear as you like on the replay. That it was out. I don't think DRS was in then. I think that was the problem. And, that was when... I mean, one of the issues is, of course, is that in the end, why they had to go to DRS is because the number of cameras and the camera work and slow-mo and all that improved. It was clearly shown that lots of incorrect decisions were being made. So the pressure just grew and grew and grew.
Yeah, well, it's a fascinating game, isn't it? It's amazing what it throws up. Even 50 overs cricket in Gaul throws up all sorts of fascinating talking points. And no doubt there'll be another one tomorrow. In the meantime, we had Andrew Strauss in the Virtual Cricket Club last night. And you can catch up, actually, on the whole interview, because it was really revealing about lots of aspects of cricket. You can catch up on the whole interview by looking at worldsbestcricketclub.com. If you join our club, you can actually see that complete interview. We'll probably do some extracts of it in tomorrow's podcast, which will look back at the third day from the Test match in Gaul. Thanks for listening. Sports Social Podcast Network.